A few years ago at Spud, Indiana, where I lived up till 4 or 5 years ago, one day the phone rang, and when we picked up the phone, there were a man on the other end, and he told us, and he asked, like, can I come and meet you guys, meaning the monastics? And because he had been doing some training and some development of his mind, and he had gotten some I don't know, some experiences he wanted to share, and he also wanted to discuss it a bit. So we said, yeah, just come up to us before lunch, and then we can have a chat afterwards. But then he said, no, I can't come up there because then I might lose my job. So then, okay, well, then maybe we can meet in the city center, like in the city of Perth. And like, no, same, same. I might be seen, so then we can't meet there. And then, okay, what about Jhana Grove, the retreat center? Maybe we can meet there. Some of the monastics and him can meet there. One day there's no retreat, so there's nobody else there, so only he can come, and then a bunch of monastics. And that was okay. So we just arranged for the day and a date and a time, and the day came, and I don't know, I think half of the monastics went over there because it's a bit interesting. We got a few clues from Ajahn Brahm in advance, and then he came, and he came with his with a projector, which I think works. It actually did work, and he had some documents. And he just sat down in front of the monastics. We sat down on the floor and some chairs. And he said that, well, he started up as saying that I have been doing some training and some development, and I know now what I did in my previous life. He said that I am now working in the Navy, and he's like a soldier in one of the one part of the Navy in Australia. And he remember that in his previous life he was a red jacket. And for those who doesn't know that, a red jacket is the name they used for the Marine soldiers quite many years back when UK had this nice idea of just export all the bad people to Australia. All the criminals and all the convicts, they were just put on a big boat, and they were transported to Australia, where they somehow had some work to do, and maybe after a while they could settle down there. And this guy who came to us, he said that he was working on one of those boats, transporting those criminals to Australia. And he also remember himself like wearing this red jacket. And he also remember like the harbor in Perth at that time, and how Perth looked like. He said that he remembered the name of his wife. He remembered the name of his two kids. He remembered where he lived, because he was given a parcel of land, like a small farm, when he was done with his marine like service. And when he remembered that, he just didn't. He wasn't sure, like, is this true, or is this some kind of fantasy? So he went to the state library, where they have all the records of past people and lives and what have happened in Perth and around Perth. And he found himself. He found that just exact name. And in those records, he said that he was married to this lady, and it was the right name of the lady. And also said that this guy had two kids, and the name of the kids were there, and he remembered those one rightly as well. So he remembered his own name, the name of his wife, and his two kids. But he had one problem, and that was that he also knew where he lived. As I said, he was given this parcel of land, which is a bit south of Perth, where it's very flat, so it's really nice to do farming there. But the thing is, there are people living there now. And he wanted to go there to see if he could find the house he built. Because he remember a house he built at that time and how it looked like. But you just can't go there, like a few years ago, and just knock on the door and say, "Hi, I'm your great-great-great-grandfather. How are you?" You can't do that. They would just shut the door and like look at him as some kind of lunatic. So, but he had a friend at one of the three universities in Perth. Perth is a rather big city. It's 2 million people living there. So they have three universities. And he somehow, they either created one for the purpose or he just got connected into an existing research project where they doing research on old buildings, historical buildings in Perth. And with that excuse, he and his friend from the university knocked on the door on that farm where he remembered he lived. And said, "Hi, we are from the university. Can we're doing this research project. Can we just walk around in this property and look at all the old buildings and do our research?" And I'm like, yeah, of course, no problem. So they were free to go around and look and ask questions and take photos and do whatever they wanted. So they started to walk around because he wanted to find his house he built. You know that the house they built a long time ago, they'd made them really solid. They don't fall apart after 50 years. They last for a long, long time. And they started to walk around and look, no, it's not that building. No, not that one. And they're just walking around, looking and looking, but I couldn't find anything. They couldn't find that building. So this guy was starting to doubt himself, like, is this just a fantasy? But at one point, where they were walking around on this property, he stopped and he looked up on a small, like a hilltop. And he said, "That's where it is. Up there on this little hilltop. That's where, now I remember, that's where my house was." So they walked up to that hill. And when they came up to the hilltop, there was nothing there. It was just a field. They were growing some kind of, I don't know, vegetables or some wheat or something. But no trace at all of any buildings. So he was a bit disappointed that he couldn't find his home, his previous home. So they gave up and they said thank you to the owner of the farm and they went back. But he didn't give up. He went back to those to the library and he found that at just that spot where they were, they had paper that there actually were a house there. But it had been bulldozed away a few years earlier. So in reality, he found his house there, even though it wasn't there. It was been removed. He remembered it, and he remembered it correctly. So that is like a live example of this idea we have in Buddhism. Venerable Bodhicanda yesterday talked about this idea of dying. And I want to say something about the continuation afterwards. And in Buddhism, you have this idea that when this human body, when it stops, when it falls apart, there's a mental thing, there's a mental process which continues. And somehow we pick up some kind of life, some kind of life form. We basically wish to live. So then the question is, how does it happen? So if we are to pick up a new life, where do we go? What is the causes for various types of existence? And the Buddha had this really beautiful simile. It's like you have a field, like a farm field, and then there is moisture or rain and water. And then there is a seed. So if you have a field like earth and you have water and have a seed, then there can be a new life. this seed can sprout out, becoming a small plant and grow up to be a big plant, either as some kind of tree or some kind of vegetables or something. And those three things, the field, that's your actions in life, good or bad. The moisture, the rainwater you need for growth, that's your craving or like your direction in life, where you're going. And the seed is consciousness. So depending on the field, how fertile the field is, meaning how good your actions are, how good your karma are, then the plant will be put into a field, whether it has a good condition for growth or bad condition of growth. And then in addition to that, it depends on how much water. So if there is a plenty of water, that will really help developing this seed. So if we create for ourselves a field with a lot of good actions, and we go for the next life, we are creating a foundation for ourselves for something really, really nice in your next round. The second thing is your craving, and in that sense is what you want to do. Because the Buddha had this idea that you can choose, actually. To a quite extensively, you can choose. But within some limitations. You can choose within the limitations of your actions, of your karma. So in reality, if you've done a lot of bad stuff in your life, that will exclude some options for you in your next round. But if you have done a lot of good things and even been developing yourself, that opens up for more options. And within those options available, you can actually choose, according to the Buddha. So what do you want? Do you want to be a human being again? Do you want to go somewhere else? Do you want to be a dog, a horse? Do you want to go to like a heavenly realm? It's actually open for you, according to the teachings of the Buddha. And remember this photo you saw there before the projector kind of collapsed. What you saw was this palm tree. And it was just on the edge of the water, and it was just leaning out towards the ocean, almost like 45 degrees. And the simile goes like this. Just as, friends, when a great tree is standing inclined, slanting and leaning towards east, if it's cut down, it will fall in that direction, which it inclines, which is slanting and leaning. And even so, a person who have long been practicing good actions of body, speech, and mind, they will incline towards a particular destination. And when he dies, or the body dies and goes away, he will go to that destination. So basically what we want to do, trust of your life, that the sum of all your cravings of where you want to go in your life, that will propel you there, according to the Buddha. If you lean towards the east, you will fall toward east. But I don't know, if you don't lean any direction, like let's see if you are like a normal tree, just go straight up. And then you're supposed to die. Which direction do you then fall? It's more like chance, maybe, or whatever happens in the end. You can go east, west, north, south, maybe because of the wind at that time or something else happening. But whatever you really lean, whatever direction you're really leaning your life, that's where you will go. That's coming from the Buddha. In Buddhism, we also have like a cosmology, meaning that there are different types of existences. And the Buddha divided into three different main groups of existences. It's called the Kamaloka, Rupaloka and the Arupaloka. And it just means the sensory realm, basically different types of existences with a body, and then some Rupa and Arupa types of existences where you don't have a body. It's like a very mental type of existence. And we are now in this Kamaloka. We have a body, we have senses. But in that group of existence, there is also what we call for heavenly realms, just as they're talking about in Christianity and most other, many other traditions. And as a human being, we can get maybe 100 years old, more or less max, maybe 80, 90, 100 years. But in those higher realms, the lifespan is much, much, much bigger and longer. The lowest heavenly realm has a lifespan of 9 million human years, according to the Buddha. That's a pretty long time. And then there's the most used presentation of the different realms by the Buddha. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, there's 7 levels of heavenly realms, or like a deva realms. In Buddhism, we use the word deva instead of like angels. And the higher up you go, the longer the lifespan is. So the lowest one is 9 million years, and the next one up is 36 million, 140 million years, 500 million years, 2,000 million years, etc. And the highest sensory heavenly world is 8,000 million years, human years. That's the lifespan of it. And all those type of existences that you have, like a body, somehow. In those higher states, you have like a fine material type of body. Above that, there is the Rupa and Arupa type of existences. And those are equivalent to the states of deep meditation. So when you get to learn meditation really well, and you get into really deep meditation, what we call for jhana, then you're basically testing out how it is to have a life in that realm, that type of existence. And the lifespan of the lowest of those realms is one kalpa. And one kalpa, according to the Buddha, is the length of time it takes for the universe to start and expand to the max and going back to zero again. Even the Buddha was teaching this idea, which is in some circles in science today, that the universe is expanding and contracting and starting again and going back again. And that's a really, really long time. Extreme. It's like time. It's a time perspective which is really difficult for us to understand as a human being, because we are so conditioned into this type of lifespan, 100 years, and sometimes we think that's a long time. So these types of existences, which is getting better and better, which you will perceive better and better, and where the lifespan is longer, is actually equivalent to the states we have in meditation. So when you really get your meditation going, it is also learning what type of existences which is available for you. I spoke to one person here in Norway a few weeks ago, and she's not young anymore. She doesn't have that many years left. And I asked her, like, what? So in a few, I don't know, in no long time, your body will probably collapse and it won't work anymore. Where do you want to go then? And she's a little bit open to this idea of rebirth. So do you want to go to some kind of deva realm? Or do you want to, what do you want to do? And she said, no, I want to be a human being again. And I asked her, why don't you go for something better? And like, but I don't know. Like, it's just some words. There's some, you can read something, and there's somebody saying something. She doesn't have any experience of it. She doesn't know what it is. But if you actually can practice, you can learn something about it yourself. So you get some experience as what it is. So that when, at one point, when your body doesn't want to hang around anymore, you actually know but more things than being a human being. The Buddha was called the knower of the three worlds because he knew what those three types, the main three groups of existence is. And he did that in his meditation, deeper and deeper and deeper, deeper in stage, which gave him knowledge about what type of existences which are there available for us. And the same you can do. If you continue this training, and after a while your meditation will deepen, you will just understand much more. You will really start to understand the big picture of this life, not just looking at this lifetime. We are living like in a time where everybody thinks just one lifetime. And there's so few people who stretch it and think longer perspective than one lifetime. But if you start to really look at many lifetimes and different types of existences, your perspective will change. And so will also your actions you do as a human being. And then, what is the cause for you to have a good life in the future? It's probably been really okay being a human being now in Europe, this time around. What can we do to make sure that if there is an existence, if there is a next existence, that it can be as good as we want? What's the causes for something good to appear in the future for us? And the Buddha, he said that in one of the texts here. There was this guy who came up to the Buddha, and he asked the following question. Master Gotama, what is the cause and conditions why human beings are seen to be inferior and superior? For various people are seen to be short-lived, and some are long-lived. Some are seen sickly, others are seen healthy. Some ugly, others beautiful. Some uninfluential, and others influential in society. Some are poor, some are wealthy. Some are born into like low families, and others are born into high families. Some are stupid, and some are wise. Like, why? Because you can see that today. It varies a lot. And this guy, he asked, what is the cause and condition why human beings are seen to be inferior or superior? And then the Buddha said, friend, beings are owners of their actions, heirs of their actions. They originate from their actions. They are bound to their actions. They have action as their refuge. It is their action that distinguishes beings as inferior and superior. Basically, karma again. Thus, an action that leads to a short life, like harming, if you are harming somebody. Action that leads to short life makes you having a short life. An action done that leads to long life creates a long life for yourself. Action that leads to sickliness to others make you sick in the future. Actions that you do that leads to people getting healthy leads you to get healthy in the future. Actions you do that makes people look ugly make yourself look ugly. And actions done that leads to beauty makes people beautiful. An action that leads to being influential makes yourself influential in the future. The way an action that leads to poverty makes people poor. And the way that leads to wealth makes people wealthy. And the way that leads to low birth makes people low born. An action that leads to high birth makes people high born. And actions and ways that leads to stupidity makes people being stupid in the future. And the way that leads to wisdom makes people wise. So that is the cause. We can choose ourselves, and we can also do a lot of action which makes sure that what the continuation will be as good as we want. What we do in this life will have effect in the future. And for those of you who are a little bit interested in this, there is a professor at University of Virginia in the United States. And he's been doing research on rebirth for many, many years. He has like a faculty there, and he's published a lot of movies and films about this and all these projects he's been doing. And he's specializing on asking small kids about their past lives. Because in this age between, I don't know, 3, 4, when you start to be able to speak, until maybe 7, that's a time where the minds of kids are quite free. And they're not starting at school yet. So they're not getting so active in their mind. And that means that their memory is stronger. And they can actually, they start to talk about what they did in their past lives. And he has been doing a lot of research about that and written books about it. So for those of you who are interested, just look that up, both books and on YouTube. He has been studying 2,500 cases of kids remembering their past lives. He's called Ian Stevenson. And I remember one story, I think you can find it on YouTube. There was this example of a man and a wife. They got a kid. And he grew up. And when he was like 3 or 4 years, he was still using diapers. So one day, the father had to change the diapers of this kid. So he lifted them up and put them on the table and started to do this changing of the diapers. And at that time, this little boy were able to talk a little bit. So as the father was changing the diaper of this little kid, the kid said, "Daddy, I used to change your diapers." And later on, this kid, as he grew up, he remembered more and more of this. And he was actually the father of his father. So he was his own grandfather. But yeah, kind of difficult. So we tend to go back to where we were. We find that like something safe. So if we are to be reborn a human being again, we probably want to go back to where we were, and maybe even back to the people we enjoyed being with. So in this Buddhist cosmology, we move around from different type of existence, up and down and up and down. But the thing is, it just doesn't go up. It also goes down again. Normally, if you end up in some kind of deva world, I think Venerable said something about that. You end up in a state which you enjoy so much that you basically stop developing yourself. There is so little suffering. There's so many little problem that you don't have any incentive. You don't have any motivation to progress. And because of that, you somehow fall down again. And then you go up and down and up and down and round and round and round and round. So not all of your life is going to be all that happy. That is why the Buddha had this idea of nirvana. For this cycling around from life to life to life in various types of existences, sometimes it's good, sometimes it's not good at all. But there is like a state we can develop as a human being which takes us to like our final destination, which we can experience as a human being, so we know what it is. Everything in Buddhism is something you're supposed to train and develop and experience, so you know what it is. It's not based on faith. And I was going to show this really nice illustration, and I can't. It's something called the 7 Shipwrecked Sailors. And I found these nice photos of all those 7 people out in the ocean and different stages of a development. And the first of these 7, it's like a story that there's 7 people, they're out in the ocean. Maybe they came up with a boat and the boat sank, and suddenly there's seven people there floating in the ocean. So what do? The first one, according to Buddha, he just sank straight down. He just drowned right away. And that is somebody who'd done a lot of bad stuff in life, a lot of dark actions. And when you do that, there is no option for you to have a really good rebirth. So in this simile, he's basically drowning, meaning he's going down, getting a life in your next round which isn't all that good. Then the second person is somebody out in the water. He's kind of keeping above water, but then he's sinking down. And then he manages to get up again and breathe again. Then he sinks down again. He goes up and down, but in the end, he falls down. That is somebody who's doing bad stuff, but also some good stuff. But it isn't enough for this person to continue having like a good type of life. The third person is actually somebody who's out there in the water and he managed to keep floating. So he's above water all the time. And that is somebody who's done a lot of good stuff. And well, if we do some mistakes and we do some stupidities, but we do enough good things in life to keep us going in the long run. The fourth person is somebody who's out there floating in the ocean and he just managed to keep his head clear. And he looks around and he sees land. So over there, actually land over there. That's safety. And that is the idea of the Buddha of a stream winner. That is someone who actually seen like nirvana. He know what it is. He had a glimpse of it while he's out on this ocean. And then the fifth person is somebody who has started to swim. He started to swim from where they are towards land. And that is someone on the second path of this training, second stage of awakening. And that is somebody who has understood this idea of non-self and is starting to work to reduce his ill will and all his cravings. But he has some work to do. He has to swim all the way into the shore, to land. The sixth person is somebody standing on the beach. He's wading in the surf. He's still kind of in the water, but he has like dry land under his feet. That's a person who are on the third stage of awakening, and we call that for being an anagami. You're almost there. You are on dry land. And that is somebody who actually managed to completely remove their tendencies to be negative and hate. And also the craving and the perfectionings and the fear and concerns. These are people who are really, really free. But they're still kind of wading, walking in the water of samsara. And then there is the last one, the seventh one, and that is someone, a man or a woman, sitting on dry land. Has been out there in the water, in samsara, have seen the way out. They've done the work swimming, and have been walking up the shore, the beach, and now on dry land. And that is somebody who have done all the work you need to do to create a really beautiful mind, and which will take you to what the Buddha called for nirvana, or final nirvana, parinirvana, when our human body dies. So that is the Buddha's similes of this development we're training, what we're doing. So on this retreat, we are running here, we're talking a lot about meditation and peace and how to do it, etc. And that really helps our life and it helps us learning. But there is also a bigger perspective. There is like a paradigm. There is like a, a, a world of ideas which surrounds us. And everything we are learning here on retreats like this also help us in like in a bigger perspective. It takes us further than just this lifetime. So it's not just your mind right now. It takes a long time for a lot of people. Even the Buddha himself, he said, I think the most reliable information we had was that the Buddha had his last human life 2,500 years ago. Before that, he had one life in some kind of Deva world. I think it was called the Tusita realm. And before that, he was actually a monastic. He was training full time with the previous Buddha. What happened before that, I really don't know. I'm not sure whether I trust the sources. But even the Buddha spent a lot of time doing this. So looking at this training in a big perspective, we also need to do a few things to make sure that the whole path will be a good one. Not just this one lifetime we have right now. Okay.
When we were at Krugeren at this retreat,
yeah. The
first one.
Yeah.
you played this chanting of this little boy.
Yeah.
That
Should I tell that story quickly
to
everybody? For those who haven't heard it, this is a guy from Sri Lanka, and his name was Dhammaruan. And he was one of those little kids. When he grew up, he started remembering his past lives. And he was just living with his parents or his foster parents, maybe. And those people were quite up to spiritual training. So from an early age, he was taking to places where he sat down and he learned to meditate. And this little kid, while they were doing their meditation, he suddenly just starts chanting. That was almost before he started to speak properly. And the parents that didn't understand what's going on, we haven't taught this little kid how to chant like this, and they didn't understand it themselves because the language was Pali. So they ended up recording it and went to the nearby temple and asked the monks there, like, what's this? There's this little kid, he's chanting something. We didn't teach him this. And these monks, they recognized it right away, that this little kid was teaching like the first sermon of the Buddha and some Anattalakkhana Sutta and some, I don't know, he was just chanting the teaching of the Buddha. And it was so perfect. And was something which was really interesting is that the way he was chanting was not the way they did it in Sri Lanka. It was another style. So it's very obvious that he didn't learn it from someone at that time, because then he would learn to do it in a different way. It was completely different. And later on, when this guy grew up, he got to remember completely what he did. And he said that he was actually a monk, I think year 1000, I think around year 1000 in India. And he was hanging around this group of monks where one of them wrote this Visuddhimagga. It's a big, like an old handbook, meditation handbook in Buddhism. He remembered that he was a monastic in the past. And he was so young, he didn't kind of remember it like intellectually or it wasn't him who deliberately tried to tell it. It just came out of him. And that's a really, really interesting story. And we can listen to that. It's just like a couple of minutes tonight. If you believe this, we can hear how the monks were chanting 1,000 years ago.
I think, it's on. So there's a book by Bhante Analio called Rebirth.
Yeah.
One of his books is on here, I think, on mindfulness of death. But he has another one called Rebirth. And he talks about some of the examples from Ian Stevenson, but he also has a whole chapter in the back about Damaruan and about the chanting. And he analyses the Pali, and he finds like how some of the grammar is a bit different as well. And he does a massive analysis on it because it's such a strong evidence for rebirth. There's no other explanation.
Yeah.
So it's really good if you want the actual minute detail.
There are people kind of facilitating to know past lives, like through hypnosis and things.
Mm-hmm.
Is it interesting or not? Like, is it favorable? I'm curious about it. I've been offered this, but I haven't done it. And I'm wondering if is it helpful or is it not helpful?
I will say give it a go. Basically just for the fun of it. Because it might be that something pops up. But the way to do it is that something you're supposed to do yourself, and you can do that as a result of deep meditation. And this remembering a past life is actually part of the training. I think the Buddha called it the hatching of the egg. So there's a baby chicken inside an egg, and it wants to get out. And from inside, you have to break it open. So you have to three times he has to hatch it to open it up. And I think the first one is remembering the previous lives. And the second one is understand karma and effect. And then the third one is the Four Noble Truths. So this idea of knowing yourself, what you've done in the past, is actually part of this training. A bit into the future, it belongs to the kind of later part of your training, but it is actually part of this training. And it puts life, this life, into a much bigger perspective.
Like, how are you supposed to get this knowledge? Like, do you see images? Do you hear? Do you smell? Like, how do you, does it appear in the meditation or afterwards? I'm very curious about it.
The way you do it is actually quite simple. And I like to say that everything in Buddhism is simple, as long as you get meditation going. The hard part is just to learn to make the mind calm and peaceful and full of energy and bliss, etc. Because then your mind is so malleable, it can do so many fantastic things, like remembering your past lives. You basically calm down your mind, get into deep meditation, and afterwards you just ask your mind. Ajahn Brahm is kind of famous going out saying that you just ask, what's my earliest memory? Your mind can answer so much. And the more powerful your mind is, the better and answer you will get. And you will re-remember what have happened in the past. It's like you go into this, I don't know, this living vision thing. And you can see it and you can smell it. You can be there and re-remember things. And then you can just give some small commands like earlier. What is the previous memory? What's, then go back and back and back and back. And basically re-remember it really powerfully. That's the way you do it. So it's the doing itself is really easy. Just ask that question. But the work is what we're doing here. And when you're at home, when you're doing your meditation, when you're studying, when thing doesn't go the way you want and you're struggling, that's when the work is done. And then at one point your mind gets really happy and peaceful, and that opens up so many doors for us to create wisdom and understanding.
This is maybe a little bit of a silly question, but how do animals gain karma? Is it more beneficial to live a life as a herbivore than a carnivore, because then they won't be killing other beings? Like, how do animals live a beneficial like a life for that will benefit the next birth if they don't really have the ability to act outside of
true and actually the Buddha said that it's extremely difficult for an animal to go like one step up. And that's because they don't have this idea of, we talk about ethics and doing good. That idea isn't that strong in most of the animals. And basically they have to kill to eat. It's just for them to survive, they have to do a lot of things and harm others. That's their lifestyle. So that kind of stopped them from kind of developing. And they don't have retreats. they don't have books. They don't have teachers. So if somebody falls down to that state of being, the Buddha said you'll be there for a long while. But there are like animals who are really exceptional, like cows. I mean that. Do they harm anybody? And at least, unfortunately, in the West, they're just forced to give milk, for example. And in the end, they would be slaughtered for food. So they actually end up doing a lot of good things. They don't harm. While there are other animals which just so cruel and kills and even kills for fun. So there are various types of existence as an animal, which is better. So maybe they first have to develop inside the animal kingdom to get better and better rebirth as an animal. And then at one point, they swap to being a human being. Like this story from Thailand. I don't know. Okay, that's the last story. I think some of you have heard this, but I will repeat it. There is this idea in Buddhism that if you develop yourself, you can have what is called divine eye. That means that you can see things which you can't see with your human eyes. And divine ear as well. You can hear things, other places. And those who develop well, they can get those abilities. And one such monk was living in Thailand. And he had a temple there. And in that temple, there were a monkey. In Thailand, there are quite many monkeys, wild. And some of them, they are attracted to the monasteries, to the temples, because there they find food. And one day, one of the monkeys were killed by a visitor with a car. And the monkey died. But according to the story, this monk, having this divine eye, he actually saw where the mental part of this monkey, where it left. And he saw that this stream of consciousness went into the tummy of a woman who was there, a young woman. And he actually told this to all the monks. So for a while, all the monks were like looking at, because this was a lady who came to this temple very often. So they were interested, is she going to become pregnant now? And yeah, after a while, the news came that she is now pregnant. And their master has seen that it was actually a monkey who died and went inside this mother. And weeks passed by, months passed by, and then she was ready to give birth after 8 or 9 months. And the monks, they just didn't say anything. They just wanted to see, look at this at a distance. And the birth went fine. Everything was happened as it should. But one thing was very peculiar. When this baby was born, he was very hairy. Really hairy, all over the body. Just like monkeys. So if you believe such a story, but that is like you could call it like a true story from this for our tradition. Coming from somebody who has developed the mind a long way and developed some abilities which all of us have, but which most of us haven't developed yet. Okay, I think that's enough for today.